While some in the media will have you believe that the institution of marriage is a thing of the past, statistics say otherwise. According to a 2019 Pew Research Center report, half of all Americans over the age of 18 are married. About 9 in 10 Americans cited love as the most important reason to get married. Unlike baby boomers who married young, regardless of their circumstances, millennials and some Gen Xers are choosing to delay marriage until they have completed their education, established careers, and have sound finances. This intentional delay may partly explain why the divorce rate among millennials is less than 50% today. Today's episode focuses on the topics of love, marriage, and relationships. My guests are Kevin and Marcy Vandiver, two dynamic millennials who wed on April 29th, 2017. Kevin is a native of Anderson, South Carolina, and currently serves as the pastor and mission developer of the Christ Center in Harlem, New York. He is also completing his PhD in homiletics at Princeton Theological Seminary. His wife, Marcy, is a native of Little Rock, Arkansas. She grew up in Nebraska. She received a PhD in urban education from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte and currently serves as an assistant professor of elementary education at Towson University in Maryland. Thank you both so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Yes.
So how did you two meet?
March of 2012, Marcy and I were both at a Freedom School training in Charlotte. Freedom School is a program that serves children who most need but can least afford summer enrichment through summer camp programming. But we were both training at a site coordinator's meeting. And what was ironic was Marcy wasn't at the previous site coordinator meeting because I had met all the other site coordinators that were coming. But she was a last-minute fill-in so that when we were meeting for the second time, getting ready, gearing up for that summer, this woman drives up, gets out the car. I said, to my friends, I was like, who is that? We were like, no, we don't know. I said, I, she's mine. So then we went inside. And people were saying her name differently. Some people kept saying Marcia. And so at the break, I went to her and said, how do you pronounce your name? She said, nobody's ever cared about how my name is pronounced. It's Marcy. And so I said, okay, well, I care. And then that was it. So then I went back Divinity School, because I was in Divinity School at the time, and I told all of my friends that I found the woman I was going to marry, and I knew it from that very moment.
It was really love at first sight for you, Kevin.
Well, not for her, but for me.
For
definitely.
You, though. For you. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Marcy, do you remember it being just like that when you guys first met?
Yes. It's so funny. My recollection was a little different. And this is a big deal because usually I hate when Kevin tells the story, so I let him go first. My version is that I just met him at a nonprofit in Charlotte, and I didn't know right away, which is the truth. I didn't know right away that he was interested, but during the summer, so it's a summer camp. So, and in Charlotte, because schools in the South kind of have an early summer, it's like June and then it ends like mid-July. And so by July, like right after the 4th, I started getting flowers sent to the school where I was working, and it was from Kevin. And so I started to connect the dots, like, oh, Kevin is into me. So he knew before I knew.
How long did you two date before you got engaged?
About 4 years. Met in 2012. We got engaged in 2016. And got married about 14 months after that, yeah.
And Kevin, when you proposed, I know back in the day a lot of times the groom would go and get the father's hand before, you know, making that big step. Did you do that? And then also, was her father pretty quick to warm up to you?
Yes. Okay. So I did go and talk to Dr. Watson about marrying her, and he was like, I'm all for it. He said, but what's your plan? He was concerned about what my plan was, about how I was going to support Marcy and take care of her and work in partnership with her towards having a good life. And at that time, we were in a long-distance relationship. So he's like, okay, well, what do you plan to do? What is your plan? And so I had to lay out a plan. I didn't bring any documents for him, but I had already kind of anticipated that he had asked that. So I had some answers that seemed to be satisfactory to him. I think he warmed up to me over time. Marcy may have a different opinion of that. First of all, I was a holiness preacher at the time when we first met. And, you when it comes to that kind of thing, Marcy's a very free spirit, and it depends on what branch of holiness Pentecostalism you're a part of. It is not, it doesn't always kind of warrant that creativity of the spouse, the pastor's wife. In a lot of those kinds of circles, the wife serves as the support to the pastor and nothing else. So that was kind of a thing. But I think that as he saw that I wanted to see Marcy flourish as much as anybody, that was a point of warming up when he saw that you'd have to ask him, but I think when he saw that I had a good head on my shoulders and that I was a serious person, and then all the other things kind of have fallen into place over time, you know.
I know you said you all dated for about 4 years before the engagement, and Kevin just mentioned the fact that you all were in a long distance relationship. Was it long distance that entire period?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Give or take. Yeah, we started, I was in Charlotte, he was at Duke in Durham, so that was 2 hours away. Actually, there was a couple months where we were both in Charlotte, but he was working full-time at a Lutheran church in South Charlotte, and I was finishing up my last year as a PhD. And then the interesting part was when we both were on the job market, and for academics, you don't know what you're going to get kind of thing. I got a job in Baltimore, and then a month later, because he would have still been in Charlotte if I took the job in Baltimore, he got a random, completely out the blue recommendation to take a job in New York City, which put us long distance, but a lot closer. So yeah, we've been long distance 95% of the time.
So you all were married at the historic and majestic Riverside Church in New York City. What was the most memorable thing about that special day for you?
I think it's a lot of buildup for that day. So it's just a lot of preparation and planning. I don't think I was the typical bride. It was more about just marrying Kevin. So I was kind of hands off on a lot of things. But I think the most special thing was marrying Kevin. We loved the cake and we loved the DJ. But I think seeing it all kind of come together and see our journey come together and date, you know, marry my best friend was the most special part for me.
Yeah, for me, watching Marcy walk down the aisle was one of the most memorable moments. I don't think I'll ever forget that. And then when we were presented for the first time as a married couple, I think that was two of the most memorable moments, because I think Marcy is definitely right. Like, it's a blur. It's very hard to pin down like a particular moment, because they told us that while we were doing the wedding planning at Riverside, it's a 45-minute ordeal. You're in and out. And literally, you just don't, you're moving so fast, talking to everybody.
You remember through pictures. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I will also say another memorable part was my dad giving us communion was memorable, because I saw how nervous he was and how, like, seriously he took the moment, which speaks to your question earlier about did he warm up to Kevin. I mean, that part there, I could just tell he was also kind of just seeing the culminating moment, and I think that was very special. Our first thing that we did as a couple in the ceremony was like take communion together, and he got to do it, and we got to walk away privately with him for a while. But I think that definitely showed just how much he liked Kevin and liked Kevin for me as his daughter. So yeah.
Marcy, earlier Kevin had mentioned, you know, the fact that he was at a holiness church and how, you know, what they expect from the pastor's wives. And I wanted to ask you, because, you know, you're still fairly young, is it challenging being so young and then having to hold that respected title of the pastor's wife at your church?
Yes, definitely. My answer will be a little nuanced, though. So the running joke in my family, people in my family, is that the one thing I prayed for when I was like dating, I did not want a pastor. I did not want to marry a pastor at all. And so the biggest joke is, haha, that's exactly who I married. And one of the apprehensions in dating a pastor came from just sometimes unrealistic expectations, I feel like, that is held for the pastor's family, especially the wife and kids. And so I was definitely nervous. We went to counseling about it. We did a lot of like proactive things, because that was a reality that I was walking into. The good thing about it for me, and just, you know, personal just beliefs and politics and the way I view the world, it was good that Kevin and I evolved spiritually to where the expectations in the Holiness Church were not expected of me. And so we kind of had our own growth and development that way. In my current role as a pastor's wife, I think Kevin, knowing who I am and speaking to the counselor and our therapist about it and just kind of being responsible before we say I do, he, when he took his full-time pastor call, he was also very forthcoming with members about, like, you know, my role. So it wouldn't be an expectation that I would have to fill those roles. And I was a pastor's child my whole life. So sitting on the second pew was just something I didn't want. I'm not wearing big hats. I'm not dressing up every Sunday. And even our therapist kind of empowered us, like, hey, there are some Sundays Marcy's a professor. She's a working professional. There are some days Marcy will not be able to make it to church. And so kind of resisting some of those expectations. I think Kevin's done a good job with that. So I think it is definitely difficult. I think we have kind of made it work as best as we can for us. The church that Kevin pastors is really, really good about it. I don't think there could have been a better call for him to accept because the members are just very loving. They don't put too much pressure on me at all. And I'm able to kind of live the truth that I've always wanted. I would say the one difficult thing about being a pastor's wife of any age is just boundaries. And you know, especially in Black church settings, the pastor is a support person. It's emergency contact if someone gets sick. It's, I need advice. I need counseling. And so we have, as a couple, just set boundaries as a family on, you know, some calls can wait till tomorrow. We will take family vacations. We will miss a Sunday or two. Just making sure that we celebrate and lift up each other as people has helped to make being a pastor's wife better. Because I do know there is just enormous pressure for any pastor's wife, let alone a young one who has a mind of her own kind of thing. So, yes.
Right. And quick question. Have either of you seen the television show Greenleaf?
Kevin watches it.
Kevin, since you watch it, what are your thoughts about the portrayal of the pastor's family on Greenleaf?
I think the way that Black church is portrayed in the mainstream is often caricature. What that show does do, though, is it brings to light the reality that the pastor and the pastor's family, they are real people and they go through real stuff just like everybody else. And I think it allows us to have critical conversations with each other, not just pastors, but the people in the pews. It allows for us to be able to talk about boundaries and rest and Sabbath for pastors and their wives, and because now we're seeing it in a more mainstream way. So I appreciate that. I think, though, that but I think that it can kind of skew the view of what church life and ministry is like, because those are mega ministries, and a lot of us don't have churches like that. A lot of us have churches that don't run with full-time staffs. You know, I have to do a lot of the administrative stuff. We don't really have a staff, per se. So I think that it kind of glamorizes church life. I think you have to take the meat and spit out the bones, but what it does do, though, and I think this is important moving forward, facilitate conversation, because we need to have some of these conversations in our church about what it means to be the pastor, what it means to have a pastor.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to UMES 30. Today's guests are Reverend Kevin and Dr. Marcy Vandiver. Our topic is love, marriage, and relationships. So what advice do you all have for couples who are nearing marriage and are embarking on living with their significant other?
The first thing we would probably tell them is to definitely get counseling and to make sure you know the person that you're going to marry. And we would say, in addition to spiritual counseling, getting counseling from a trained professional, just to make sure that skeletons that are in the closet come out. You know, just intrinsically, like, who the person that you're marrying is and all of that. I think when it comes time to actually moving in with someone, I think there are always moments, conflict and negotiation around, like, space and boundaries. It's funny because we got married and moved into a New York studio, and most people who are listening will know New York is very short on real estate, and the spaces are very small. So we moved from independent spaces to a small space, and so
400 square feet.
Yes, tiny, tiny. The kitchen is the living room, is the bedroom type thing. So it's a small New York studio, but it forced us to kind of learn each other for who they are 24 hours a day. Like dating, you meet on a date or you go on vacation together, but 24 hours a day, all day, in a very small space, you learn what makes them tick, pet peeves, those types of things, but also you see the person in, I guess, especially with space, you don't have much room to
escape.
Yeah, it's like dating without the escape, and you know, that kind of, you have to wrestle and negotiate and deal with conflicts in a way where it's not escapable. And then also, we would advise probably be aware of just finances and just the financial commitment, and learn how your person spends money and saves and that kind of thing, because I think there are some practical things in addition to spiritual things, but practical things that have to be discussed before you move in, sign the lease, be on a contractual agreement with someone, but then also before you marry someone. I think that's practical.
Is it healthy for young couples to actually live together before they actually get married?
I think for... You said, is it healthy?
Right, because, you know, if we're looking at it from the more traditional view, especially coming out of the church, they would teach you, well, wait until you actually get married and then you all move in together. But today, a lot of couples do it the opposite way, where they live together for a while first and then they end up getting engaged and getting married.
Yeah, we know several couples who they've moved in before marriage and it works. And we know some that waited and that worked too, waited to live together as well. Kevin and I have the experience on the latter half. We didn't move in till we got married, and there was still a learning process. I think there's a learning process either way with people cohabitating, two independent adults with different things that make them tick and different patterns and behaviors coming together. It's definitely a learning adjustment.
Beyond the issue of cohabitation, are there other issues that you see millennial singles and couples facing today that might differ from previous generations?
Can I just go back to the last question? That's a couple of things I wanted to add. Living together is one thing, or, you know, charting a life towards moving in and living in the same space, which is truly important. Joining with that is you got to make sure that your life goals are similar, right? Like, how many kids does one want children? Because
yeah,
that stuff will come up later if you don't try to iron that out before. And I think that the core belief should be important. How can two walk together except they agree? And you can be I was talking about being holiness earlier. I can be holiness and Marcy can be Baptist, and we might not have the same ideas about theology, about God, all those things need to be taken. You got to have those conversations before you say I do. You got to work all that stuff out before you get married. And I think also talking about debt, how much are your student mm-hmm. loans, yeah, you know, how will that affect our ability to make lives for each other and for our families moving forward? Those are the real issues that all come together. All of those are pertinent issues that come together when it comes to, you know, making life with your significant other.
Yeah. In relation to things we have to think about that previous generations did not, I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
College expenses is more expensive than it's ever been, and it's expected to rise. So, like, millennials have had to face conversations on loans and family planning. A lot of us, yes, we're getting married. Some are not. But then also, kids aren't necessarily immediately in everyone's future. So, like, those are kind of conversations that we've had. Also, a lot of millennials date long distance. And Kevin and I were fortunate. We were generally on the same coast. But we have friends who have been married intercontinental because they have high-demand jobs in two different cities. Some are out of the country. So it's like, those are conversations that disrupt traditional families of maybe the 1950s and 60s, or even our parents' generation. And then also kind of tackling, like, the role of each spouse in a marriage kind of thing. Those are conversations that I think millennials are surfacing. I think marriage for us can look very different depending on the millennial that you would encounter, whereas perhaps in previous generations, there was maybe one or two archetypes of marriage, and that's what everyone wanted. But I think for us, we complicate it, and it fits many of our professional lives.
I'm glad you brought up the role of the spouse. So the Pew Research report that I cited in the introduction said that about 7 in 10 adults said it was very important for a man to be able to support a family financially, to be a good husband or partner, while just 32% mentioned income for a woman to be a good wife or partner. Do you agree with those survey results?
I know for a lot of women, the answer is yes. I do know there are several women, and I don't know if we had another episode, we can unpack it, but
right,
I'm sure it's the role of theology and just tradition and Black household traditions and that kind of thing, reasons why so many Black millennials are ingrained And that, but I think, yes, generally we typically, a lot of women do expect their spouse to be financially stable. I think the one thing that complicates that, and this is where like family dynamics and diversity come in, is that I do know, we both know several working dads, several dads who work at home and or are stay-at-home dads who are also contributing financially, because if you have three kids and you're watching them, daycare bills are high, you are definitely contributing financially and are supporting your family, but it may not come down to income. The wife might make the most, but the dad is serving a pivotal role. So I think there's a lot of, I don't want to say complications, but there are a lot of nuances, I think, with that, especially with millennials today. I also know on the inverse, and I guess this is like beauty shop talk, since I do talk a lot to women quite a bit about, you know, marriage and life and partnership, but I do know there are, to that statistic, there are also several women who would probably give up quite a bit of financial security just to have a spouse that is present and emotionally available. So I think there are things today that we want. As you mentioned, love was 9 out of 10 of what we wanted. I think there are things that many millennial couples are deciding what is important and deciding what role each person should play and who is the proverbial breadwinner. And also thinking about feeling secure and being happy in terms other than finances. But generally, by and large, if I were to think about like woman-to-woman conversations, I think the expectation is that men are also the men in the relationship do contribute financially, definitely.
Obviously, for y'all to have such, you know, a strong long-distance relationship, communication had to be key during that early courting stage. Now, as a married couple, what's the role of effective and appropriate communication, and how has it evolved since you all have been married?
I think we always communicated fairly well. We set some rules very early when we were dating. We weren't going to be yelling. We don't yell at each other. We don't call each other names. That kind of stuff. That was always something we set from the very beginning. I am very competitive, and so I used to like to argue to win, just to argue, you know, just not just picking fights, but whenever we did have a little spat, I would not listen. You know how they talk about how when you're having a tense conversation with somebody, and some people are not listening to what you're saying, they're just waiting for you to be quiet so they can say what they want to say. That was kind of me at first. And I had to learn that we were on the same team and we were going in the same direction. So we needed to make sure we had to come to some kind of understanding. So that was one thing. But we always communicated fairly well. We always even argued well because we were able to eventually come to an understanding. And then in addition to that, I think that as we've been married and we've been together going into our 7th year total, I have learned, and I think Marcy has learned, we have to speak in each other's languages. Like now I know if there's something I need to say, how I have to say to myself, how would Marcy best receive what I need to say, you know? Because sometimes, you know, when you're communicating and you're learning how to communicate with someone who is outside of you, you say things and they come across in ways that you don't intend, but that's just a part of the learning how to communicate with someone else process, the process of communicating with other people. But now I ask myself, how should I say this? And it's not always bad stuff. It's like, how should I speak to Marcy? How should I, if there's something I want to, we should do, how can I best do it in a way that serves her? I think that when you are communicating, especially with someone with whom you're married, there is an integration of your thought with how it is intended and how it will be received by that other person if you're learning them, which I think is an important part of being married to somebody.
In Michelle Obama's new memoir, she says that she and Barack early on in their relationship had to do counseling because, you know, their schedules were so busy and they just weren't communicating properly. They weren't vibing properly on the same wavelength. You know, you all have very busy schedules. We talked about the distance factor, et cetera. And Kevin, as you just mentioned, you all have been together for a total of 7 years. So how do you all, and I think you've answered this question somewhat throughout the conversation, but how do you all continue to make the relationship grow? And how do you continue to keep it fresh and exciting?
We do daily check-ins almost. Kevin's actually probably better at it than me, where you know, simple questions like, you know, hey, are you okay? You know, do you feel loved? Do you need anything from me? Those types of daily check-ins have almost become procedure, where it's, and it's not a formal moment. It's just, hey, on the couch after dinner, hey, do you need anything? You know, that kind of thing. So that's one thing that we have done to make sure that our, that problems are not slipping through the cracks and becoming bigger problems. We're kind of daily, we reset and, you know, kind of evaluate. My date nights are important, obviously. Also, just affirming each other professionally and personally. So, a lot, I think, and I think a lot of millennials deal with this since we are working professionals. Kevin's also in school. I'm a tenure track professor. So, there's a lot of written expectations with like our jobs. We have to write often, read often. We have to go to work. I work three states away from where I live. I have a long commute. Kevin has a commute. He lives an hour from his church. So I think if you do not stop and check in, things can get lost in the repetition of just each day. So one way that we have kept our relationship fresh is, one, always being open to counseling and making sure that if we need to see a professional about an issue or topic, keeping that door open, but then also just making sure that daily if we solve any argument or disagreement early, which is my recommendation for people who are dating as well, solve things early, but then also making sure that you show love and whatever love language your partner receives, but show love as often as you can in their language and just doing some pulse checks every now and then that the way you're showing love is the way they need it.
I would also add that another thing that keeps our relationship fresh is that we have goals that we chart them together. So at the beginning of every year, we set goals for our house and goals, both personal and collective goals, and we check in on those goals. Like, where are we on this? How are we doing with that? I think that keeps us moving. And we try to pray together. I think that's important too. Like, we bring our collective concerns together and we pray. We pray together as well. I think that's important.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation, but unfortunately we are out of time. Thank you all so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We end each show with a segment called Parting Shots. Here I give my thoughts on something happening in the news, pop culture, or life in general that's piqued my interest. We've been discussing love and relationships all morning, so I would be remiss if I did not congratulate my parents, Reverend Obie and Dr. Authorie Wright Jr., who will be celebrating their 47th wedding anniversary on June 25th. Also, tonight is going to be the series finale of the insanely popular HBO series, Game of Thrones. Now, I've only watched 5 episodes of the show's first season, so I'm definitely not up to date with anything that's going on. And for the past 6 weeks, all I've heard is how great Game of Thrones is, who was killed on the most recent episode. There was some uproar recently over an episode in which a Starbucks coffee cup was involved, and I know that set social media on fire and literally broke the internet. I hear about these Game of Thrones pop-up restaurants and bars in the DC area, and everybody says how great they are, and again, I have no clue what anybody is talking about. There was a red wedding, I don't know. But I will say this, for everybody who is a Game of Thrones fan, this is your big night. So dress up, have a party, you know, do whatever you do. Enjoy the show, and I'm sure I will hear all about it tomorrow morning on the news and the social media. As for me, I'll probably be watching baseball or reruns on Netflix tonight at 9 or 10 when Game of Thrones comes on. And that is our show for the week. Thanks again to our guest today. We do this every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Like us on Facebook and other forms of social media. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.